Érettségi vizsga angol nyelvből. Hallott szöveg értése emelt szint.
Welcome to the listening component of the Matura examination. The listening material and the instructions are recorded on this CD, and the tasks and instructions are printed in your test booklet. There will be three tasks, and every recording will be played twice. The tasks will begin with some music, and then you will hear, and you can also read, the instructions to the task. This will be followed by a silent period on the CD, in order to give you some time to look at the task in your test booklet before hearing the text. Then we will play the recording in one piece. After another short silent period, we will play the recording for the second time, but now in shorter sections and with breaks between the sections in order to give you enough time to write down your answers. Please note that the first item in each task, marked with a tick, is always an example. The whole test is exactly 30 minutes long. Good luck. Task 1. In this section, you will hear the life story of an extraordinary scientist called Caroline Herschel. Your task is to decide whether the following statements are true, false, or we do not know because the text does not say. And write the appropriate letter in the boxes on the right. Write A if the statement is true, write B if the statement is false, and write C if the text does not say. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. A means true. B means false. C means the text does not say. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording. But then I awoke, I found my life was not my own. My brother took me to look for stars somewhere so far from home.
Caroline Herschel was born in Hanover, Germany, in 1750. She was the eighth child and fourth daughter of Isaac Herschel and his wife Anna Ilse Moritzen. At the age of 10, Caroline was struck with typhus, which limited her growth so that she never grew past 4'3". Her family thought that she would never marry, and her mother felt it was best for her to train to be a house servant. However, her father wished her to receive an education and taught her directly or included her in her brother's lessons. The family was very musical, and her older brother, William, eventually moved to England to work as a music teacher and organist. At the age of 22, Caroline left Hanover to join him in England. There, she took on the responsibilities of running his household and started learning to sing. Caroline took several singing lessons a day from William, who was busy with his musical career organizing public concerts. She became the principal singer at his concerts and acquired such a reputation as a vocalist that she was offered an engagement for the Birmingham Festival, but she turned it down because she refused to sing for any conductor but William. Although she was successful, she didn't blend in with the local society and made few friends. Then, something quite unexpected happened. William became increasingly interested in astronomy, transforming himself from a musician to an astronomer. Caroline, again, supported his efforts. She said, somewhat bitterly in her memoir, "I did nothing for my brother but what a well-trained puppy dog would have done. That is to say, I did what he commanded me." In addition to assisting her brother with his observations and in the building of telescopes, Caroline became a brilliant astronomer in her own right, discovering new nebulae and star clusters. She was the first woman to discover a comet, she discovered 8 in total, and the first to have her work published by the Royal Society. She was also the first British woman to get paid for her scientific work, when William persuaded his patron to reward his assistant with an annual salary. By the way, William was named the King's personal astronomer after his discovery of Uranus in 1781. After William's death in 1822, Caroline retired to Hanover. There she continued her astronomical work, compiling a catalogue of nebulae. She died in 1848, aged 97, after receiving many honours in her field, including a gold medal from the Royal Astronomical Society.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
But then I awoke, I found my life was not my own. My brother took me to look for stars somewhere so far from home.
Caroline Herschel was born in Hanover, Germany, in 1750. She was the 8th child and 4th daughter of Isaac Herschel and his wife Anna Ilse Moritzen. At the age of 10, Caroline was struck with typhus, which limited her growth so that she never grew past 4'3". Her family thought that she would never marry, and her mother felt it was best for her to train to be a house servant. However, her father wished her to receive an education and taught her directly or included her in her brother's lessons. The family was very musical, and her older brother, William, eventually moved to England to work as a music teacher and organist. At the age of 22, Caroline left Hanover to join him in England. There, she took on the responsibilities of running his household and started learning to sing. Caroline took several singing lessons a day from William, who was busy with his musical career organizing public concerts. She became the principal singer at his concerts and acquired such a reputation as a vocalist that she was offered an engagement for the Birmingham Festival, but she turned it down because she refused to sing for any conductor but William. Although she was successful, she didn't blend in with the local society and made few friends. Then, something quite unexpected happened. William became increasingly interested in astronomy, transforming himself from a musician to an astronomer. Caroline, again, supported his efforts. She said, somewhat bitterly in her memoir, "I did nothing for my brother but what a well-trained puppy dog would have done. That is to say, I did what he commanded me." In addition to assisting her brother with his observations and in the building of telescopes, Caroline became a brilliant astronomer in her own right, discovering new nebulae and star clusters. She was the first woman to discover a comet, she discovered 8 in total, and the first to have her work published by the Royal Society. She was also the first British woman to get paid for her scientific work, when William persuaded his patron to reward his assistant with an annual salary. By the way, William was named the King's personal astronomer after his discovery of Uranus in 1781. After William's death in 1822, Caroline retired to Hanover. There she continued her astronomical work, compiling a catalogue of nebulae. She died in 1848, aged 97, after receiving many honours in her field, including a gold medal from the Royal Astronomical Society.
That is the end of Task 1. Task 2. In this section, you're going to hear a story about two famous film directors, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg. Your task is to write one word in each of the gaps below using the exact words that you hear in the recording. First, you will have some time to look at the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
It's no secret that George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are good pals, but perhaps the best demonstration of their friendship is the fact that not even a huge bet has been able to come between them. Back in the late 1970s, Lucas was extremely nervous that his upcoming sci-fi film, Star Wars, wouldn't be a big hit. After just 1 week of filming on location in the deserts of Tunisia, he was already well behind his production schedule thanks to several on-set problems and breakdowns. Throughout the entire production, the film suffered from a variety of malfunctioning electronics, broken props, and crew injuries. When it moved to a studio in England, the British crew had little interest in making what they considered a dumb children's movie. Harrison Ford was convinced that Star Wars would be a complete failure. The actor who played Obi-Wan Kenobi, Alec Guinness, thought that the film was rubbish, just a stupid fairy tale. Lucas was close to having a nervous breakdown over the fact that the movie was not living up to his original vision. He desperately needed a break, so he visited his friend Steven Spielberg, who was working on his own classic, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Suddenly, the two of them were arguing which movie would do better. But they were arguing for each other's films. Lucas said Close Encounters would make more money, while Spielberg insisted on Star Wars. George Lucas said, "I'll give you 2.5% of Star Wars if you give me 2.5% of Close Encounters." After a brief hesitation, Spielberg accepted the bet. And even though Close Encounters made a whopping $303 million, Star Wars defeated it, making $775 million worldwide in 1977 alone. Since then, Spielberg has continued to get his share from theatrical releases and home video sales. Yahoo estimates he's made $40 million so far. Luckily, the two have remained friends, teaming up for four Indiana Jones films in the years since the unusual bet. Of course, the fact that they're both billionaires may have made the bet a slightly less bitter pill to swallow.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
It's no secret that George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are good pals, but perhaps the best demonstration of their friendship is the fact that not even a huge bet has been able to come between them. Back in the late 1970s, Lucas was extremely nervous that his upcoming sci-fi film, Star Wars, wouldn't be a big hit. After just 1 week of filming on location in the deserts of Tunisia, he was already well behind his production schedule thanks to several on-set problems and breakdowns. Throughout the entire production, the film suffered from a variety of malfunctioning electronics, broken props, and crew injuries. When it moved to a studio in England, the British crew had little interest in making what they considered a dumb children's movie. Harrison Ford was convinced that Star Wars would be a complete failure. The actor who played Obi-Wan Kenobi, Alec Guinness, thought that the film was rubbish, just a stupid fairy tale. Lucas was close to having a nervous breakdown over the fact that the movie was not living up to his original vision. He desperately needed a break, so he visited his friend Steven Spielberg, who was working on his own classic, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Suddenly, the two of them were arguing which movie would do better. But they were arguing for each other's films. Lucas said Close Encounters would make more money, while Spielberg insisted on Star Wars. George Lucas said, "I'll give you 2.5% of Star Wars if you give me 2.5% of Close Encounters." After a brief hesitation, Spielberg accepted the bet. And even though Close Encounters made a whopping $303 million, Star Wars defeated it, making $775 million worldwide in 1977 alone. Since then, Spielberg has continued to get his share from theatrical releases and home video sales. Yahoo estimates he's made $40 million so far. Luckily, the two have remained friends, teaming up for four Indiana Jones films in the years since the unusual bet. Of course, the fact that they're both billionaires may have made the bet a slightly less bitter pill to swallow.
That is the end of Task 2. Task 3. In this section, you are going to hear a radio program about Jack Ma, who is the chairman of Alibaba, a Chinese e-commerce company. Your task is to write the letter of the correct answer into the boxes on the right. First, You will have some time to study the task, and then we will play the whole recording in one piece. Then, after a short pause, you will hear the recording again, but this time we will play the text in shorter sections to give you enough time to write down your answers. Now look at the task in your booklet. Now listen to the recording.
Hello everybody. You're listening to 108.7 Radio Bridge. In focus today is Jack Ma, the man who went from English teacher to billionaire. According to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, he has a higher net worth than Google chairman Eric Schmidt and media mogul Robert Murdoch. But you may not have ever heard of him. He is the chairman of Alibaba, the Chinese e-commerce company he co-founded. Bloomberg News tells us that when Alibaba offers shares in the US, it could make Jack Ma one of the top 20 richest people in the world. Here in the studio, we have Laura Marcinek, who is a business reporter. Laura, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
First, just tell us how much Jack Ma's company is worth and why his net worth has tripled just this year.
Sure. His company is worth $8.5 billion. And what he has done with Alibaba is that he got into an untapped market in China for e-commerce. You know, where people are buying and selling things. So he has sort of built the Amazon of China. The difference between him and Facebook chairman Mark Zuckerberg is that there is a real business model behind Alibaba.
Tell me a little bit more about Jack Ma. How did he start Alibaba, the largest e-commerce company in the country and, by some measures, in the world?
It's a funny story. At an early age, Jack Ma developed a desire to learn English, so he rode his bike each morning to go to a nearby hotel and talk with foreigners. He would guide them around the city for free in order to practice and improve his English. Although he failed the university entrance exam 3 times, he became an English major and graduated in 1988. He went on to teach at a local college. He had no background in computing and was introduced to the power of the internet in 1995. When he first used it to search beer, he didn't find any Chinese results. Maybe this experience made him start his own internet company. In the meantime, he moonlighted as a street peddler, selling flowers, books, and flashlights to make ends meet. In 1999, Jack Ma created another company with $60,000 in cash gathered from 80 people and left teaching. After a failed attempt at a business index site called China Pages, he started Alibaba, an online marketplace in China where now 8 million merchants sell goods.
What is his life and lifestyle like?
He sings Chinese pop songs and Lion King favorites at soccer stadiums in front of crowds of thousands. And he's very passionate about Tai Chi. He nicknamed himself after a favorite book character of his, who is a kung fu guru who teaches an apprentice to become a hero. In 2007, he purchased a 5-bedroom, 658-square-meter penthouse in Hong Kong for $38.7 million.
And his leadership style?
When it comes to his leadership style, Jack Ma holds a mass wedding annually for Alibaba employees, and he offers them interest-free loans to buy first homes. He says he explicitly manages in a way that puts customers first, employees second, and shareholders last.
And the mass wedding is among couples and not a marriage to the company, right?
Yes, of course.
Thanks very much, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
Now listen to the recording again. Remember that this time we will play the recording in shorter sections.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to 108.7 Radio Bridge. In focus today is Jack Ma, the man who went from English teacher to billionaire. According to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, he has a higher net worth than Google chairman Eric Schmidt and media mogul Robert Murdoch, but you may not have ever heard of him. He is the chairman of Alibaba, the Chinese e-commerce company he co-founded. Bloomberg News tells us that when Alibaba offers shares in the US, it could make Jack Ma one of the top 20 richest people in the world. Here in the studio, we have Laura Marcinek, who is a business reporter. Laura, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
First, just tell us how much Jack Ma's company is worth and why his net worth has tripled just this year.
Sure. His company is worth $8.5 billion. And what he has done with Alibaba is that he got into an untapped market in China for e-commerce. You know, where people are buying and selling things. So he has sort of built the Amazon of China. The difference between him and Facebook chairman Mark Zuckerberg is that there is a real business model behind Alibaba.
Tell me a little bit more about Jack Ma. How did he start Alibaba, the largest e-commerce company in the country and, by some measures, in the world?
It's a funny story. At an early age, Jack Ma developed a desire to learn English, so he rode his bike each morning to go to a nearby hotel and talk with foreigners. He would guide them around the city for free in order to practice and improve his English. Although he failed the university entrance exam 3 times, he became an English major and graduated in 1988. He went on to teach at a local college. He had no background in computing and was introduced to the power of the internet in 1995. When he first used it to search beer, he didn't find any Chinese results. Maybe this experience made him start his own internet company. In the meantime, he moonlighted as a street peddler, selling flowers, books, and flashlights to make ends meet. In 1999, Jack Ma created another company with $60,000 in cash gathered from 80 people and left teaching. After a failed attempt at a business index site called China Pages, he started Alibaba, an online marketplace in China where now 8 million merchants sell goods.
What is his life and lifestyle like?
He sings Chinese pop songs and Lion King favorites at soccer stadiums in front of crowds of thousands. And he's very passionate about Tai Chi. He nicknamed himself after a favorite book character of his, who is a kung fu guru who teaches an apprentice to become a hero. In 2007, he purchased a 5-bedroom, 658-square-meter penthouse in Hong Kong for $38.7 million.
And his leadership style?
When it comes to his leadership style, Jack Ma holds a mass wedding annually for Alibaba employees, and he offers them interest-free loans to buy first homes. He says he explicitly manages in a way that puts customers first, employees second, and shareholders last.
And the mass wedding is among couples and not a marriage to the company, right?
Yes, of course.
Thanks very much, Laura.
Thanks for having me.
That is the end of task 3, and also the end of the listening exam.